One more pod before football returns. Jules rounds up the international games. We ponder what to do with Villa's nice fixtures but lack of form. And yes, I'm still hovering over that transfer for Jack Grealish. Hi guys, welcome back to the FPL pod. Kelly, Sam and Jules back with you. And if you are watching on YouTube, let's address the elephant in the room. We're only, what, 4 or 5 weeks into the season, if that. We've already had Sam Bonfield recording from a car today. Dun, dun, dun. Over to you, Jules. Explain yourself.
I'm sorry. I thought because of the tube strike, I had to drive in to work today and thought leaving early would be okay to arrive on time to start to record the show in a proper studio, but it didn't. So I'm literally on a Tesco car park somewhere in kind of central London with a laptop on my lap and the mic in my hand. So, but all ready to go. I've got my notes. I've got my notepad. It's all there.
My favorite thing is the fact that just before we recorded, he was like, people are walking past and looking at me. Because Sam, at least when you did it, I think you were away from other people, whereas Jules is in a busy shopping, yeah, like literally a supermarket car park.
Yeah, at least I was in the hotel car park where there wasn't really many people around, so it was fine. But yeah, good luck, Jules.
Anyway, let's move on. Let's get Jules out of that car park ASAP. It feels like it's quite a big week this game week, because despite there being no Premier League football last weekend and this being our second pod, kind of previewing the next game week, there are currently 547,000 wildcards active. That's as of Thursday morning at 8 a.m. So I'm sure by the deadline, it is only going to rise. So lots of people probably listening to this needing plenty of help picking their teams. We will do our very best. And before we go any further, Sam, I'm sorry, we're not going to hear from you for a bit because I'm just going to let this man take it away with his international roundup.
Because loads of things happened, guys. You know, during this international break for Premier League players, I mean, a lot of it was really good, like Erling Haaland scoring 5 goals against Moldova and 2 assists. Mikel Merino also scoring a hat-trick with Spain in a midfield position, or in a striker position, but still good to know if you're Mikel Arteta, an Arsenal fan. We saw Martin Odegaard also doing well with Norway and playing one full game and one half of them. Mo Salah played with Egypt the 2 games, scored in the first one against Ethiopia, 2 games for Bruno Fernandes as well, 90 minutes and 66 minutes. Bernardo Silva scored. We had all the English boys. You must have been happy, doing quite well. Declan Rice, but Madueke scoring, Gehi scoring, Konsa scoring, Elliot Anderson being a bit of the star over the 2 games against Andorra and Serbia. We had the first minutes of Alexander Isak this season, who played 18 minutes with Sweden against Kosovo. Omar Marmoush played with Egypt, played well, and then got injured at the start of the second game. We had all the South Americans who did kind of okay. But most importantly for us, the likes of João Pedro, Estevao, Gabriel, Paqueta or Martinelli will come back quite late as often from South America and the qualifiers. So a lot of things happen for our Premier League players during this international break.
And thanks, Jules. You can go now. You can leave the car park. That was brilliant. I think, firstly, credit to England, Jules. That was almost the most complimentary thing you've said about them, because that they weren't bad, but this is not the podcast to talk about that. Firstly, the South American players, that is what worries me a little bit, Sam.
Yeah, it's always a risk, isn't it, when you have an international break with
especially
the South Americans.
Pedro.
Yeah, you always feel a little bit risky. I mean, I maybe feel a little bit better about it given the injury to Liam Delap and the fact that Chelsea are a little bit short anyway up top. So maybe that means he's more likely to just continue playing. Not that an injury to another player should make you feel more comfy about the player that you have, but it weirdly does, doesn't it? Because it does feel like he's their best option, and particularly as we don't really know what's happening with Cole Palmer at the moment, they won't want to lose too many of their important assets going through. So I'm hopeful for him. It kind of makes me a little bit more wary with the captain's armband, I guess, because he's definitely one of the captaincy options for this week, given the fixture and the form that he's been in. But maybe his minutes over the international break and the travel and everything else just makes it a little bit of a pause for thought there.
As for Isak, I mean, it was only 18 minutes, not even 20 minutes. Lots of people are bringing him in. It feels like we still need to wait another week, Jules. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. We need to hear from Slot already. We saw him at the training ground yesterday, Isak at the training ground yesterday for the first time, really, as a Liverpool player, you know, with his wash bag and going ready to go in the gym or, you know, do some fitness work, what, you know, whatever he really did over those 2 days, because it's Thursday, Friday, and then that's it. The weekend is there, and Liverpool obviously will play. So it feels a bit early because we just don't know what his role will be. He might not even be in the Liverpool squad for all we know. Ekitike had his first cap for France. didn't touch the ball. He played 30 seconds, love him. But still, he's there. He's, you know, forever he's there. This is the first cap. But you would think that from an honest lot point of view, it feels quite rushed to have had Isak 2 days with you at training and then bring him in into the team and just changing everything already. So I don't think he will start anywhere. He might be in the squad, but even if he is in the squad, he might not get any minutes or maybe just a few minutes. And I don't think it's worth taking that risk for now.
Anything else you want to point out from the internationals that caught your eye, Sam, in terms of FPL?
There was a lot of upset Anderson fans because although he played very well for England, he picked up 19 defensive contributions in that game. Whereas he's only managed 11 in the opening three, like 11 in each of them.
He was brilliant, wasn't he?
So, so good. But I think it does prove a point, doesn't it? Because over the last three game weeks, Anderson owners have been a bit frustrated because he's not picked up the DEFCON points, missing out by one each time. So to see him then go and rack up 19 for England in the opening game of the international break was a little bit frustrating for his owners, but I think does prove that, you know, he is likely to still do that. I mean, the situation at Forest is kind of interesting as well, though. I guess we need to kind of consider what happens now. New manager, different style of football, potentially. What does that mean for our defensive assets there? So there is a lot to consider over the international break, both in terms of the players and also the personnel changes at Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, what do you make of the Postecoglou appointment there, Jules? Because a lot of people have been saying it's a very different style, but then a few people have jumped in and said, well, he did kind of change his style to help them win the Europa League. Sam's smiling. We'll come on to her thoughts on that in a minute as well.
Yeah, I think it's very exciting to have Ange back for us as well, for the league, I think, because of the football that he wants his teams to play. And we saw that at Spurs. It was very entertaining, unless you were Spurs fans, obviously. But for me, and Forest's strength under Nuno, and again, it's not because they were very good defensively, very well organised, that they can't play in a different way at all, the likes of Milinkovic and Murillo, defensively especially. But it's still very different to what Ange will do or wants to do usually. I don't believe he can change his style so drastically that he will go kind of Nuno way instead of the Ange way. Because he said it enough, there's just one way for him to play. So I think it would be a bit of a mini revolution at Forest, which could be good or not so good for us. Maybe better for attacking assets than for defensive assets. If you have defenders from Forest in your squad, I think it's probably better if you have attacking, or if you want to bring attacking Forest players in your team. But I think it'd be quite interesting. And they start with a game away at the Emirates against Arsenal, which is obviously not easy one on Saturday lunchtime. But it should be quite interesting to see what he would be capable to do with that squad. Different squad to the one he had at Spurs, for sure.
And Sam, you brought in Morgan Gibbs-White. As Jules said then, this could be good for your attacking options. Maybe not this weekend, but yeah, you must be pleased all of a sudden.
Yeah, no? I mean, I'm troubled up. Well,
I was trying to find some positivity in your team. There hasn't been too many beacons of light this season.
I'm troubled up on Forest. So Gibbs-White, I'm actually quite cool with. Yeah, I'm planning to bench him this week. But then for the games that follow, actually, after the Arsenal game, it's really nice fixtures for Forest. So yeah, Gibbs-White feels like a hold for sure. I'll just leave him on the bench for this week. The double up of Murillo and Sells, though, I'm not hugely excited by that. I think, you know, I wasn't excited by that anyway for the Arsenal game, but I think moving forward, given Ange's style of play, usually I think we might see a bit of a difference. And, you know, we saw over the international break that Milenkovic isn't exactly brilliant at playing against a high line, as we saw for England. So it'll be really interesting to see how it goes. I think my plan this week is probably to lose a Forest asset, though, because I'm not convinced that defensively they're going to be the right way to go, particularly as they've been frustrating anyway defensively over the opening 3 weeks. So Murillo probably go for me, and then I'll definitely be keeping Gibbs-White, though, for the fixtures that we have moving forwards.
Okay, well, moving on, it does feel like we've kind of been eased into the Premier League season in the opening weeks because, of course, there's been the EFL Cup for some teams, but that's been it. We've been able to just watch our teams in Premier League action and not have to worry about anything else. Well, this is where the fun begins, because between now and the next international break, which is in, I think it's the second weekend in October, teams will have 7 matches to play. So there are 4 rounds of Premier League matches, 2 Champions League and Europa League matches, Conference League matches, and a round of League Cup matches as well. So yeah, it's about to get trickier, isn't it? That does mean that Arsenal, Villa, Chelsea, Liverpool, City, Newcastle, Forest and Spurs, yep, the joy of so many teams getting into Europe, will all have 7 matches between now and the last week in September. And of course, not forgetting Crystal Palace, they also have six. In contrast, Bournemouth, Leeds, Manchester United, Sunderland and West Ham all play the least amount of matches with just four Premier League fixtures. That's because they're out of the League Cup and they aren't in Europe too. Sam does some brilliant maths in preparation for this pod, but it is really, I mean, you just counted games, but you know what I mean? It's really something that we can look at and go, oh yeah, they look like they're busier. But actually, when you put it down on paper, Sam, it's a big difference. Some teams are almost playing double the amount of games.
Yeah, it's massive, isn't it? Because if you think about it, for those teams that you just mentioned last, the likes of Manchester United, they're just going to play their Saturday/Sunday game every week. And they're going to have a whole week of training leading into that. For the other teams around them, they've potentially got to play on a Tuesday, Wednesday or a Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then they've got to play again at the weekend. And then they've got to do that the week after and the week after and the week after. So actually, it does make a big difference. And I think, you know, sometimes you look at it and you go, well, some of the squads are smaller, maybe we see less rotation. So maybe that's good for us because, you know, less rotation, more starts, more minutes, maybe it's good. But then you actually think, well, in some ways it can be a bad thing because it means that they get tired quicker, less likely to have the energy that they maybe need in those matches. So it is definitely something that you need to consider over the next few weeks, is that this September month is incredibly busy and the players are going to have a lot of minutes in their legs. So something to just be mindful of, that maybe we might get some rotation, but also maybe we might get some tired legs out of our players and therefore not hit the peak returns in FPL that we would hope for.
Anything you want to add on that, Jules? I imagine you just agree.
Yeah, completely.
And also, pray for me and Sam, listeners, during this, because it means that Jules is going to be way busier with Champions League. So this pod's going to be all over the place.
Be in the car all the time. Might be on a train next time.
You just don't know. Exactly. But I agree with everything Sam said. Obviously, I think it's inevitable that there would be rotation for sure. And that might be just in the EFL Cup, for example, for some of those clubs that you mentioned, Kels. Or more than that, because let's not forget as well that it's still very early in the season. And you've just finished your kind of preparation fitness-wise for some players and you can't have them playing seven games in 24 days, more or less, for those kind of teams that we mentioned. So you can't take that risk. You can't. It's too early in the season. The players are not ready to play that much anyway. Maybe a bit later on, it would be different. But for now, it's just like in terms of the minutes that your players are supposed to be playing right now, in all that data and planning that all the teams are doing, especially those top teams, I don't think it's possible that their players are playing, you know, all seven games, full 90 minutes or close. So just expect the rotation. It's okay if sometimes somebody is going to might not start and come on later. Doesn't mean that you need to get rid of all the players you've got for all those teams that we mentioned with seven games in 24 days. But I think it's inevitable that some players will get less game time.
It does make picks at the likes of Bournemouth, your Antoine Semenyo's, players like that, even like Jack Grealish at Everton. They're two of the most transferred in players this week. And you can see why they've got the form and they've got the fixtures, but not too many fixtures. So yeah, you can see why people are maybe now looking outside of the supposed big six and those teams in Europe. Let's take a look at the players that we should be looking at. I'm sure Grealish and Semenyo are going to be two of those mentioned. So we're going to specifically focus in on game weeks 4 and 7. And as we always do on this podcast, we're going to use the fixture difficulty rating to kind of work out who has the best fixtures to help us guide those picks. And at the top of the fixture difficulty rating, it's Aston Villa, Tottenham, Leeds, Bournemouth. Then it kind of goes down to Liverpool, Crystal Palace, Fulham, and then we're virtually getting down into the teams with tricky fixtures. Villa, though, at the top, I mean, it's hard to... I'm doubled up on Villa at the moment. It's hard to encourage any investment, isn't it, Jules, until we see a little bit more from them?
Yeah, it's been a very poor start of the season from them. The defeat last weekend... Oh, sorry, the weekend before the international break, I think was very difficult and certainly not expected in that, you know, in that way. So it was a bad one. So for all the hopes we had for a Konsa, Watkins, Rogers at the start of the season, and rightly so, because they obviously have been very good for the last 2 years. Those players have been very good. We saw Morgan Rogers with a lovely assist for Madueke, for example, in the game against the England game against Serbia. So they are still very good players. It's just not happening for them with Villa so far this season. And I think this is a big, big weekend for Unai Emery and for Aston Villa to just forget what happens in the first three game weeks and start, and your season starts now, basically. But they need a result. And I think, yeah, I think it's very important for them to bounce back this weekend.
I'm struggling, Sam, because I want to, unsurprisingly, bring in the two players that I've mentioned. I should have done it before now because of price rises, but I was just a bit worried about other injuries in my team, as I always am over the international break. So I'm probably going to sell Morgan Rogers for one of those players, though I thought he played well for England. Ollie Watkins, though, is a problem. I don't know whether, and I think a lot of people will be thinking about this. I think I'm going to want Alexander Isak. I just don't want him for this week until I've seen a little bit more from him. So I'm kind of holding that transfer there, but that's the only reason that Ollie Watkins is staying in my team ultimately, because I'm holding mm-hmm. that spot. And I think a lot of people are going to be in the same boat.
Yeah. It'll either be Isak or Gyökeres when the Arsenal yeah. fixtures change, that a lot of people are looking at for that Watkins spot.
So I don't want to waste the transfer away from Watkins, but I do want to sell Watkins. The players I want are midfielders, basically. And I think that is, I'm kind of summing up how a lot of FPL managers are feeling, I reckon.
Yeah, I'm like you.
Totally agree. And then you look at the fixtures and you go, okay, well, it's Everton and Sunderland up next before Fulham and Burnley. Like, I don't feel like the fixtures that you should be selling a player ahead of. Like, they're nice fixtures, particularly, as you say, if you're earmarking that position for somebody else 2 or 3 weeks down the line anyway, because then you're just making a transfer to then transfer that player out again, which doesn't make a lot of sense. And the forward line, I mean, reality is that at the moment, the player that you don't have in the forward line that you probably want is Haaland, and you can't get there because it's too difficult financially to get from Watkins up. You know, you've still got to find a significant investment. So I think most people will end up keeping Ollie Watkins because they'll look at these fixtures and go, well, things might improve. And I do think the signing of Harvey Elliott will help Ollie Watkins. I think his creativity, I think, will make a big difference. We saw how important he can be in the Euros for the under 21s in the summer. Like, he was absolutely phenomenal, won the player of the tournament in that one. And actually, last season for Liverpool, right, he didn't play many minutes. I think he got 370 in total over the season. But he created a chance every 37 minutes that he was on the pitch. So good creativity skills there. So maybe we will be less reliant on it just always being about Morgan Rodgers and Ollie Watkins. So maybe Harvey Elliott helps Watkins. I think for me, with the fixtures that we have, I'm just going to hold him for now because it doesn't really make a lot of sense for me to go early on Gyökeres given the fixtures that they have in the next couple of weeks after this week. So I'm going to hold for now. But once Isak pulls on a Liverpool shirt and starts a game, it's going to be very hard to stick with Watkins if he's still not scoring goals.
Do you agree though, Sam, that like someone like myself, where they've got the double up, selling Morgan, it's annoying because actually longer term, I think I'd want Morgan Rodgers more than Ollie Watkins, I think, just because of the price point. But I just don't know how long I can wait for those returns. I feel like I've already waited long enough.
Yeah, I get it. And I think the other thing to say, Kels, is that if you sell Morgan Rodgers this week and you bring in the likes of Semenyo or Grealish or whoever it is, you're probably going to wildcard in the next 2, 3, 4 weeks anyway. So
probably the next international break.
Yeah. So if we see, okay, so if it's the next international break, maybe you get...
Or the week before.
Yeah. So if you get to that point, then the reality is that you can go back. Like, it's not like selling Morgan Rodgers means that you can never own him again for the rest of the season. Like, you can go back there at that point if it looks like it's a mistake, or it might be actually that there's a different way that you want to go about changing the midfield at that point, because right now Morgan Rodgers isn't looking like a great pick, but maybe in a couple of weeks there's another one of your midfielders that you can use to get him back in. So I can totally understand it. I wouldn't want to be carrying the double up despite the fixtures because of the way that they've been playing.
Okay, thank you. I love using this podcast for the benefit of my own transfers. But I don't think I'm the only person, as I said, that's kind of in those boots, because we all thought that Villa were gonna start well and they were really nicely priced assets. Spurs then, we will come on to Sam on this, of course, but let's go for the unbiased opinion first. Their fixtures are West Ham and Brighton at home, followed by Wolves away and Leeds. No, I've got that the wrong way around. You're West Ham away, yeah. Brighton away, Wolves at home, and then Leeds away. They're lovely fixtures, aren't they, Jules?
Yeah,
pretty much. I mean, I know they're away from home, but they're not bad.
Yeah, no, you're right. They're not bad. But like you said, three away and one at home. Spurs capable of obviously being very good away at City and then being very terrible at home to Bournemouth, for example.
Not watching this on YouTube. If you're not watching this on YouTube, by the way, I just got to tell our listeners that listen to this podcast. Sam, like, put her head down to look at some notes. And then as Jules started talking about Spurs, she looked up as if to say, here we go. Why have we gone to the Arsenal fan?
No, I'm just saying.
I like the fact that you said, non-biased opinion, let's go to the Arsenal fan.
Well, I'm the only,
I'm always very objective.
Neutral
here. I'm always very objective.
Sorry, Jules, we interrupted you, Karen.
But it's the truth. They were terrible against Bournemouth. They were very good away at City. This is what it might be. I think West Ham away is not a difficult fixture for Spurs and for Thomas Frank, even if West Ham obviously had that reaction away at Forest just before the international break. But it's still the West Ham team that has been struggling since the start of the season, with Graham Potter still very much in some sort of pressure, under some sort of pressure. So the only thing with Spurs is that I'm not really sure what to look for, really. You can go and try to go for a new signing like Colomwani, for example. But again, a bit like for Isak, we just don't know what are the plans for him from a Thomas Frank's point of view. Kudus, I think, was a good idea at the start of the season, and some dribbling looks good, but there's just no end product there, you know, clearly. I don't think he's had a shot on target so far this season, and we've played 3 Premier League matches already. So I'm really not sure about Kudus, for example. That's true. It's true. I mean, there's a couple...
I shouldn't have bought him in.
But Sam still has him because he wears the right shirt, and that's the only reason, to be honest.
But I don't even have that reason. I just bought him in because I sat and watched how terrible they were.
Yeah. So Brennan Johnson, you know, Richarlison, Solanke, there's injuries as well. So I think Spurs is quite difficult from an attacking point of view. Defensively, of course, you can go for Pedro Porro. Jed Spence, by the way, congratulations to you for your first England cap. That's a hell of an achievement. And that was very good. And Vicario is doing really well in goal, one of the highest goalkeeper in the game. So there's options defensively. Attacking-wise, even with a good schedule, I'm not sure.
I actually don't like agreeing with Julian Ron, but I do agree with him, Sam, in terms of it's tough to pick from the attackers. I don't know why I picked Mohamed Kudus. Well, I do, but it was a silly decision. But defensively, that like having Porro so far this season has been brilliant. I know Van de Ven owners have also been brilliant. There's a lot of people doubled up on that Spurs defence. And looking at those fixtures for the next few, I imagine that's not going to change.
I mean, no, I think if you've got the double up, you keep, I don't think I'd feel comfy having a Spurs defensive double up, but then that's just me. Like, we always have it in us.
Me neither, but I know people that do.
Well, yeah, and we have only conceded one goal so far this season. Like, so actually, defensively, we have been solid. So... but I sort of agree with what George was saying. Like the attack is difficult right now to invest in. Like, I've got Kudus. There's absolutely no way I'm going to sell him ahead of these fixtures though, because there's potential. I mean, look, the game this week is against his old club. Like, so there's that element to it as well. Mm. He surely wants to get something in that one. So I'm definitely holding him for the West Ham game. Moving forward after that, like Brighton's more difficult for sure. That's always a bit more of a challenging fixture. And maybe there's a look there, but it also gives us a game to see how the new signings fit in. Where do we see them come in, like, and how does that impact the way that they're going? Does Brennan hold his place on the left? Does Pap still play in the 10? One of those is going to be unlikely to be the case, because we're going to have to fit in Xavi Simons, so that's going to have an impact, right? I think it's just important that my advice with Spurs is hold what you have. I don't think I'd be investing any further for this week. I'd just keep what you've got, play them this week, and then use this week as an opportunity to see how Thomas Frank beds in the new signings. And then moving forwards, the fixtures do remain nice for Spurs, but we also have to remember that we're about to start a very, you know, I know we've just been talking about it, but once the Champions League kicks off, Thomas Frank hasn't done a European season before. Last season with Spurs, we did mass rotation around the Europa League. So these players aren't necessarily used to playing weekends and midweek and then again and then again and then again, because we were playing very, very different teams in the Europa League to what we were playing in the Premier League last season. So it will be interesting to see how that dynamic plays out. But hold what you have, I think, is my advice with Spurs, and probably don't invest any further just yet.
Can we please ban the phrase "and again and again and again" on this podcast? Because that just reminds me of those Cole Palmer goals and the t-shirt you bought me at the end of the season.
Yes,
favorite t-shirt. All the time. Chills through my spine.
I forgot about that.
I didn't, sadly. Okay, so we've addressed the two teams at the top. Then it's Leeds and Bournemouth. And Bournemouth, I mean, Leeds are tricky because they're a newly promoted side, but Bournemouth in particular, I mentioned Semenyo. They've got Brighton at home, Newcastle at home, Leeds away, Fulham at home. So 3 of the next 4 are at home. Semenyo's the obvious. Any other interest in Bournemouth? I know a lot of people have been looking at Senesi, Jules.
Yeah, we mentioned Senesi, I think, in last week's show too. Defensively, not that they look great. Maybe during the preseason, we mentioned that as well in our preview shows, and also at the start of the season, but things have got much better, which we expected, because as we said, they sold 3/4 of their defense, for example. So you have new players, Diakité and Truffert, for example, to just integrate and for them to adapt to your style and to your game. But then it's just, Iraola is such a good manager that you knew that it would not take long until this team was good again, like they were last season, and they would be like that. So Semenyo Tavernier, who signed a new deal, by the way, which is very good. Good for him. Evan Nilsson, who's... okay, not always, I think, the most consistent in terms of returns, but you know that they're going to create chances for him. You know he's going to be there. The goal that he, sorry again, Sam, but the goal he scored against Spurs was a bit lucky, but at least, you know, he was there in the right position, and then they had more chances too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think Bournemouth defensively, offensively, with three home games in the next four, I think it's a no-brainer.
Anything to add on Bournemouth, Sam? Anyone else you're looking at, or are they just the standouts?
I mean, they're the standouts. Just to follow up on Senesi, he's also got four defensive contribution points across the game. He's got the most defensive contributions of all the defenders, 28.
Wow.
So he's only missed out twice. Yeah. So I think, you know, you are looking at the potential upside of those, as well as the potential for clean sheets over the fixtures that have coming. And of all the defenders in the game, he's the highest scoring apart from Timber. But then Timber is a bit of an anomaly because of the 24 pointer that he picked up in game week 2 against Leeds. So if you leave Timber aside, he is the highest scoring defender in the game so far. And I think at the price point with the fixtures, he really does look like a fantastic option. And then Semenyo, top for chances across the midfielders in the game with 7 for chances. And then he's also created 5 chances for his teammates. So looking good for both assists and goals. So the pair of them looking like really good investments for the next 4 weeks at least.
Okay, let's go to the other end of the ticker then, because Burnley are at the bottom. So I know that Estev is looking forward to being my third sub and everyone else's third sub for the next few weeks. They've got Liverpool and Manchester City across their next four, so he'll be firmly welded at the end of my bench. And then above them is Chelsea, Arsenal and Newcastle. But I think it's really important to point out that they mainly are down there because their fixtures are skewed by one match. Newcastle have got Arsenal, Chelsea have got Liverpool in that period, and Arsenal have also got City and Newcastle. So a couple of tricky ones in there for Arsenal. But with those teams, are they not fixture proof, but if you've got their big assets and you've paid for them, I presume you're still assuming, Sam, that they're gonna still be able to return in them.
Yeah, I mean, take Arsenal, for example. We said in one of the pods leading into the season that the fixtures looked horrendous. But if you look back at the record against those teams, they've actually got really good records against them. So the chances are they were still going to perform well, which is what we've seen over the course of the opening 3 weeks. Like, we've had good performances, good returns from Arsenal assets. So, and it's the same with João Pedro, right? So on paper, obviously they've got that Liverpool game, which is tough. But you look at the ones around that, the Brighton game, the Brentford game, the Manchester United game, all of those games feel like there's potential returns for João Pedro in that. And if Cole Palmer's fit, then of course you could bracket him in with that conversation as well. But I think when it comes to these big teams being at the bottom, it's only if we see a run that's got like 3 or 4 absolutely horrendous fixtures and they play all of the big six, or, you know, the ones that are going to be competing for the title, that's different. But if there's just one match in there that's looking red on the ticker, then I tend to kind of disregard a little bit, because as long as we've got the form coming out of them heading into the matches, then actually probably they're still worthy of investment. It's the teams that are around them that come lower down. Like, it's interesting to me that Jack Grealish is getting so much love, rightly, because of the way that he's been playing. But Everton are really low on the ticker, partly, again, that's skewed by the Liverpool game in the Merseyside derby. But there's also a game in there against Palace, who have started the season well. Villa and West Ham are the other two. Who knows what's getting from them?
Yeah, I'm obviously looking at Jack Grealish, in case I hadn't mentioned it. And their three nicer fixtures are at home, aren't they? I think, which plays a big
they
part
are.
With the new stadium,
yeah,
and everything. So it's Villa at home, then you've got Liverpool away, then you've got West Ham and Crystal Palace at home. But I do agree, the Palace is the trickiest, but that's also, maybe this shows I'm not as much of a planner, that's also the last one of the next four. So I kind of feel I've got a few weeks to kind of deal with that or come to terms with, yeah, the fact that's happening. But yeah, I think the fact they're at home. But yeah, that also shows, doesn't it, Sam, that they're far down on the ticker. And yes, we should use it. But actually, when you look at it in detail, you go, okay, they're not the easiest fixtures, but Villa haven't had the best start. And yep, Palace, and that tough fixture against Palace is at home. So yeah, worth bearing in mind all of those things. Just a quick question for you, Jules. Have you got any Arsenal players at the moment?
No, I had Bukayo Saka, but obviously with the injury. Yeah. So no, my boy Saliba,
of us,
as you
then.
Know. No.
Wow.
But that's understandable. And
it's not, again, a very pleasant place to be.
Yeah, it's not. And the Leeds game, obviously, you know, if you had Timber for the Leeds game, or defensively, they've been really good in the first two games. No goals conceded. David Raya doing great. All of that. But then the game's coming up. Even if we agree with everything Sam just said, it's not because Arsenal play a top team that you should not have Arsenal players in your squad. I just think it's difficult if you don't already have one, or if you just have one, to add some more now. Just wait a couple of weeks, and then after that you can invest heavily in Arsenal players and treble up even if you want.
Anyone else want to throw any other names that they're targeting over the next few weeks in at this point? Jules?
I thought the Crystal Palace and the Fulham fixtures looked decent as well from game week four to game week seven. So, and especially a team like Fulham, who obviously is not in Europe, for Palace, it's a little bit difficult because as we said, it's the first time in Europe. You would expect Glasner, and we saw that already when they had to qualify, that he plays strong teams in Europe too. Even if it's only the Conference League, there might be a bit of rotation, but they don't have the depth of squad either. So I think it'd be interesting to see how they cope with the two competitions. But I think there's good fixtures there. So if you want a Mateta, if you like Munoz, if you like Robinson, for example, who's finally coming back through injury and played half an hour the other day. Those, I think, are good options, really. Josh King looked so, so good as an 18-year-old. He was a bit unlucky, obviously, that his goal was ruled out against Chelsea. But at his price, I think it's if you want there, even if you leave him on your bench sometimes, with the fixture that Fulham have going forward, Josh King is a very, very good pick, I think.
Yeah, and that's a really good point with Palace as well. Although we do have to consider their European football. Palace's fixtures are Sunderland at home, West Ham away, then a tricky one, Liverpool at home, then Everton away. And Jules, you mentioned Fulham as well, Leeds and Brentford at home, followed by Villa and Bournemouth away. Sam, are you still, I guess also you brought in Mateta, didn't you, for these kind of fixtures?
Yeah, and happy to have him. Obviously, Ismail Assar owner's needing to deal with that as well now after his injury potentially over the international break. So that'll be something to consider as well, and the impact that that might have. Obviously, hear what Glasner has got to say. But yeah, I think I'm happy to have, very, very happy to have Mateta. I think I'm in the market for a new defender. I don't
Munoz?
He's definitely, yeah. So Murillo is going to go for me this week. So it's going to be Munoz, maybe Senesi. I can't quite decide whether I want to go Palace and go for those fixtures, whether I want to go Bournemouth and hit those fixtures. It's quite difficult to decide between the two of them, actually, because they both have nice fixtures. Or do I go early and bring in an Arsenal defender and just cover out that potential, but feels less exciting given the fixtures that they have coming up over the next couple? Because all right, it's Forest at the weekend and I would expect them to win that game, but after that, Manchester City, and then, well, Newcastle have been a bit of a different beast anyway this season, but those two fixtures don't sound great. It's game week seven onwards. I really want Arsenal investments. So I'll have three from seven for sure. So I think probably a little punt on a Munoz or a Senesi or somebody like that is how I'm going to go.
Okay, then it's time for a differential of the week. The less said about last week, again, the better. Sam went for Gibbs-White, who got 2 points. Jules went for Ouattara, who got exactly the same.
Yeah, but he got a goal disallowed. That's an extra point, surely, because, you know.
Okay, because he had a goal disallowed, you can go first this week, Jules.
So I've got plenty
reward
this week, because of all the
just
new signings.
Just go for one, please. We're
yeah, no, no,
time.
But I liked Voltomade or Chukwueze. Or Jeremy Pino, Crystal Palace, which would be good. Even Kevin from Fulham, because I think, you know, it's like, I think Kevin could be a very good pick going forward. This is a bit early for all those players I mentioned. Then I had two. I like Estevao, but the problem with Estevao, who's been looking really good for Brazil and for Chelsea lately, is coming back late from South America, as we explained. So instead, I went for Iliman Ndiaye at Everton. I know you love your Jack Grealish, and it was his birthday the other day. Happy birthday, Jack. Joyeux anniversaire. 30. Yeah, that hit different, brother. But Iliman Ndiaye, 6.5 million, just below the 10% threshold of our differentials. Returned in the last two games. Clearly more of a finisher now that Grealish is there, and Jude Bellingham to some extent, than the creator that he had to be a lot at Everton before. And I think Grealish is helping him massively for that. And we said Aston Villa haven't been very good. It's at the Hill Dickinson Stadium in Liverpool, Everton for Everton. So I think Iliman Ndiaye could still be good. And I think this is the last week probably where he would still be a differential.
Sam?
So when I originally made this pick, he was only owned by, well, I say only, he was owned by 9.3%. That was on Monday morning. When I checked just before we started this record, he's now up to 9.7%. So definitely going to be the last week that this one is a differential as well. And proving very popular and in my actual team as well. So back in one of my own. Jules, no singing, please. It's Jean-Philippe Mateta. So we've already talked a lot about Mateta and Palace's great fixture run that they have, starting with a game against Sunderland this weekend. He's had six attempts on goal so far. Two of those have been classified as big chances. He definitely feels like a player that I've been a bit unlucky with, only to have that one converted penalty goal so far. So do think he could do well. Now, it was interesting because I nearly backed out of this one when I looked at Sunderland's underlying numbers. So they've actually conceded the second fewest attempts so far this season of all the clubs in the league, which really surprised me to see them doing so well defensively. But Palace come into this one on the back of that 3-0 win against Villa. They'll be looking to continue that form. I do think he's going to be increasingly important. He's on penalties. Yeah, it's Mateta this week.
That's a more hopeful pick than anything, isn't it? Joking.
Yeah, it is.
Double win then if he scores this week. You'll win differential of the week, potentially. And also get points for your team. Okay, then transfers and captains. You guys have already hinted at it. Jules, you haven't hinted as much about yours. You've kept your cards close to your chest. What are you going to do?
I'm just not sure. I've got
Palmer
issue.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
Palmer is obviously...
Oh, you've still got Palmer.
I still have Florian Wirtz, who, even when he plays for Germany, he's not doing that much. Apart from the great free kick that he scored.
You're not going to sell him against Burnley, though.
No, I know. That's my problem. I'm going to keep him. He's going to be rubbish. And then next week, you can laugh at me and say, well, the guy's averaged 2 points for me this season.
I've got him as well. Don't worry, we're together.
I know, but it's not because you have him that makes me feel better, you know? So a lot of people still have him. So I'm not sure where I'm going, but I'm going to go somewhere. So I'll let you know.
Brilliant. I'm going to go
thanks
somewhere.
For that. Really helpful.
It's insightful, that one.
How many transfers have you got?
Just one. That's my point.
He's going to leave his car going
if
somewhere.
FPL want to send me some free transfers, they're
captain
welcome.
Then, Jules?
Oh, captain,
who's
I think
captain?
That's easy.
It
has to
that.
Be Mo Salah. Yeah, Mo Salah.
Okay, easy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to sell Morello this week. I can't do any more weeks of the Forest double up defensively. I just can't deal with it anymore. And they've got Arsenal and I don't trust Postecoglou's defence as we've seen over the last, I think I've been burned. So I'm going to sell Morello. I don't know yet. Munoz, Senesi, I'm dreaming about Munoz and Senesi at the minute, trying to decide which one of them I want to bring into my team because both have potentially huge upside. Laquire is another one that comes into my thinking, just saves a little bit of money, but I think it'll be one of those two. I can't see myself owning a Palace defender that's not Daniel Munoz because we all know how I feel about him after last season. So one of them two comes in. Captains, I'm on Salah at the minute. Is it that easy? He's not been great. He really has. I know it's Burnley.
I would go Pedro if he hadn't had the travel.
Yeah, I tend to agree, Kels.
But he's had the travel, so be my Salah, yeah. Isn't it? Maybe I'll go super Jack Grealish if I bring him in. Why did I fist pump then?
Weird. I would love that.
If you go Jack Grealish captain, that'll be...
I won't.
I think it will be Salah for a lot of people. I think...
He will come good at some point. It can't be that average.
I feel like I've been saying that the whole time.
If I had Gakpo or Ekitike, I'd find it much easier with the captaincy this week. Because both of them have the form.
If only we all knew Isak was going to start or something like that. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Well, can you imagine? If Slot came out and said, I'm going to start Isak,
the world's getting
Isak in. And it's got the armband.
I don't think
but he's not
going to
tell us that. No, he won't. So it probably will be Salah. I've done two differential captains the last 2 weeks and both of them have failed. So I just think I'm going to play it boring and go back to Salah this week because it's Burnley and
And a lot of other people will do it. Everyone else will do it, I think.
Yeah,
most people. Which isn't always a reason to do it, but that's the way I play the game, isn't it? Okay, then that's where we're going to end this pod, Jules. You can get yourself out of that car park. I was hoping that I'd have seen you like waving at that little old lady's going to do their shopping.
Yeah, I mean, there's one that parked just next to me and just looked through the window like if it was her car that she was looking into. That was me, yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for your commitment to the pod. Remember, everyone, it's a Saturday deadline. Get your teams locked in before 11 a.m. The fantasy show's back on Friday. Praz is in the studio with me. Then off the bench, we'll be back on Monday. Lee and Az talking us through all the talking points from game week 4. Have a good week, guys. We'll see you next time.